Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, welcome to the Frantcast. This is so exciting. We're back. This is only the second episode of this year because Fran has been a little busy lately. But we're excited to be back. We're very excited today. We have Jose with us, YouTuber extraordinaire, who is here to talk with us about his video that he did, Style and Flair, a retrospective of The Nanny. And this is basically a documentary about The Nanny. It's over 80 minutes long, and it goes through everything that you could want to talk about with The Nanny. And I'm very excited to dive in. And thank you so much, Jose, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this is your first time on the show. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about what you do and particularly on your channel.
Sure. So I had a professional life before getting into the YouTube game, and it was really just a hobby. Turns out there's a lot of bad information gets spread on YouTube, believe it or not. Yeah. So at first, my channel was all about responding to that misinformation, and I still do a bit of that. But then I decided one day to just talk about an old TV show, and people really seemed to love that. Mm-hmm. And I figured I should do more of that. And I just started creating these big comprehensive videos of classic sitcoms from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And, it grew out of hand, and this is just what I do now.
Yeah. So what was the first show that you did the retrospective on?
The very first one I did was for the show Roseanne.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason I had that idea is because they had just brought the show back for its 10th season. And I thought it would be interesting to just watch the original and watch the reboot just for fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The more I watched it, the more I realized that especially the original show had a lot going on and was saying a lot of stuff. And I thought, I have a tiny little YouTube channel, so maybe people would like to hear about this.
That would be interesting. I have to watch that one. I mean, in some weird ways, and there's actually some similarities between The Nanny and Roseanne. They both are about kind of blue collar middle class, I guess, heroines at the lead. They both have unusual voices. They both have a certain sass to them, I think. One case, one is married with family and the other is single, but I don't know, you wouldn't put them together, but I think there's some similarities.
Yeah. I mean, they were contemporaries and there weren't a ton of female led sitcoms in the 90s. I mean, there were a few, but, and those two shows in particular, when you think about them, they're very much defined by their lead characters. Mm-hmm. Although, they are making Roseanne without Roseanne nowadays, but I don't think you could possibly do The Nanny without Fran Drescher.
No, it
would be a completely different show.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you talk a lot in this video, you talk a lot about it being a kind of peak example of the sitcom formula. And I guess, what do you think that you said when it comes to a show that executes on a format, very few did it as well as The Nanny. And so what is it that you think is that sitcom hot, the sweet spot that The Nanny kind, what do you look for in a sitcom, and why would you say that it executes on a format well?
Well, when I look at a sitcom, I tend to, in this context, I would look at, what it's doing that previous sitcoms had done and how it's in some ways trying to change, the genre and create some kind of innovation, because every show has sort of a mix of those two things. And in the case of The Nanny, there was not a ton of innovation. I would say very little. So there was so much emphasis on sort of the standard format of a sitcom, you know, the idea that when an episode begins, everyone will end up the way they started. And characters and their dynamics are fairly static. You could take an episode from season 2 and mix it in with season 5. You would notice some differences, but they would be very minor when you compare it to other. There are definitely other sitcoms where, you know, like the entire cast can change between like a couple of seasons.
That's true. Yeah. It, well, like something like The Office or whatever, because of the format, you're going to be able to have people come in and out, new cast a lot easier than a show that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
It's about a family. I mean, it's just harder to replace people.
Definitely.
You know, unless you're Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or whatever. yeah, you said, it's interesting what you said. You said, this is a show that was very aware of itself as a sitcom and its place in sitcom history. And because of that, it knew how to fit that role perfectly in the era it was created.
Well, yeah, in The Nanny, you can see a lot of references to past sitcoms and a lot of reverence and respect to those old shows. I mean, they like a sort of a parody of Dick Van Dyke on one episode. And of course, there were a lot of guest stars from the past as well. I mean, Dick Van Dyke was literally an episode. And it's sort of a respect. It wasn't like it wasn't one of those shows that started off trying to reinvent the wheel, trying to say we're going to turn like the sitcom format on its head. It was going in saying this is going to be a multi-camera sitcom with like the standard sets, the sort of storylines you expect, the type of humor you expect, and
yeah,
you know, when you go back to the 90s or 80s and watch some of these shows, because a lot of shows do sort of stick to this format. Another thing where The Nanny really excelled is that it was very funny. And that's a very good execution of the formula, because some older sitcoms, they'll just use the same old tired jokes. Like that's how they stick to it. It's like, we'll use the old line that people have been laughing at for years, but The Nanny would actually make an effort to be funny. And I think when you look at sitcoms that represent that sort of classic style, they have that real attempt at humor rather than feeling like they're going through the motions.
One thing that I appreciate about, there's many things I appreciate about The Nanny, but one part that I appreciate is that it didn't feel a need to teach us a lesson in every episode, which is something that kind of like The Modern Family or even The Middle, which is a show I love. You know, like every episode had to end with this narration of like, here's the lesson that we learned, you know, or How I Met Your Mother did that as well. Whatever, it might work for those shows, but I appreciate the fact that it could just be funny. It could just be a comedy. We could just enjoy that. We didn't have to be taught a lesson at the end of every episode.
Yeah, that was a bit refreshing in some ways. I think some shows really try to tie things up into a neat bow at the end. And
yes,
The Nanny would often go for the joke rather than the heartfelt moment, more so than for a show centered on a family, particularly. It was an interesting choice.
One thing I maybe if I would take issue on the documentary is that you said that you had very few queer characters appeared on the show, and the ones that did were stereotypes. I actually think the show doesn't get enough credit for how comfortable it was with LGBTQ characters and representation. for the era that it was in. I mean, you think this was like pre-Ellen. I mean, this was not an era that you had like characters coming out and gay characters on a frequent basis. So yeah, they were maybe a little bit stereotyped, but I think compared to a lot of other shows, I mean, certainly compared to Friends, compared to, you know, a lot of other shows of that era, I think it's pretty good in that respect.
I definitely agree with you to an extent. Mm-hmm. Sort of,
I mean,
like,
if you're looking at it as to now, but if you think about it at the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's sort of always a challenge whenever I make one of these videos, is to sort of balance a modern reading with trying to understand something in its context.
Yeah.
And in that instance, it was definitely more of a modern reading. This is me sort of looking back. And
yeah,
you're right that most shows of that time were not great. There's a lot of, and you know, if I wanted to go down the list of everything that a show from the 90s is saying that wouldn't pass today, I mean, that would be a very long and dull mm-hmm. video, and I think yeah. a bit unfair.
Right.
But at the same time, I wanted to at least acknowledge, like, hey, if you're someone who lives in the year 2023 or later, and you watch this show, you're going to see a bit of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ho, ho, ho. We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Patreon.
Do you love Hallmarkies podcasts, especially at Christmas?
Do you enjoy the holiday previews, recaps, interviews, and bonus episodes?
If the answer is yes, please consider supporting the Hallmarkies Patreon. We need your help to do what we do both during the Christmas season and all year round.
But not only do you help a podcast led by strong, independent women by becoming a Patreon, you get to become a part of the Hallmarkies family.
Starting at only $2 a month as a patron, you will have access to our Facebook Patreon group where we talk about the movies, shows, and more all year.
We also have many monthly patron watch-alongs with guests like Lacey Chabert, Natalie Hall, Paul Campbell, Mary Lou Henner, and more, giving their behind-the-scenes details of their films.
As a patron, you also have the chance to provide input into the podcast and even join us at different tiers.
So this Christmas season, spread some cheer to the Hallmarkies Patreon and become a member today. You won't regret it.
Go to patreon.com/Hallmarkies to learn more.
That's patreon.com/Hallmarkies.
Yeah. I think the thing that makes the show the most special, I mean, aside from just how great Fran is and how much I love her, but the chemistry between her and Charles was just so great. And the way that they were able to build that tension and that chemistry up through the years, I just think was so satisfying. I mean, there was anything that I think did not work at all and was extremely frustrating, or I didn't enjoy, was the "you took a back" whole plot. That whole season, mm-hmm. I hate that whole plot line, was not my favorite. But for the most part, they did a really good job of kind of building up that romantic tension. And you talk about that in the documentary, and then also how, you know, it was a different time as far as like a workplace, having this workplace romance. But they do have this, you know, great episode when they try to not be in each other's space or whatever. And then they finally realize at the end, they're like, we're living in the same house. It's going to happen. Like, we're going to. I just love their romance. I think it's so good.
Yeah. And it's definitely a type of chemistry that caught me off guard. And it feels mm-hmm. very organic in the show, because yeah. I'm sure you're well, that was not like the plan from the beginning, wasn't to get them together. But once you had them in the scenes together and you saw them, how they just fit and they just yeah. worked somehow. And yeah. I think that's the secret to any good TV romance. You need mm-hmm. the characters to genuinely have chemistry.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were so like caring and thoughtful towards each other. Like you had that moment where you talked in the documentary about the episode with the pageant and Gracie and everything. And there's like a sweet little moment when they're watching the home video at the time where Fran just reaches up and grabs Maxwell's hand and squeezes his hand, you know, just because she knows that would be hard for him. And just like little sweet, tender moments mixed in with all the big, you know, big moments that I think really endeared you to the couple.
Yeah. And it really shows the differences between them as well, because it shows how aware Fran is, but mm-hmm. not just that Maxwell is going through something, but how he would appreciate someone respond to him, because yeah. he's not a big flashy emotional person. There's a lot of jokes about how English he is. And mm-hmm. I mean, when he sees his brother again, after how many years, and they just have this very low yeah. key reunion, that was so funny. So something like just a gesture with her yeah. hand would mean so much more to him than her like getting up to give him a hug and saying, it's going to be okay yeah. or whatever.
And that two episode arc of when she almost leaves with Nigel, and then when she's engaged to Maxwell and he comes back and then it's all revealed. I love that whole, those two episodes are two of my favorites. I think it's so good. And just so very tender when she realizes that she's glad she stayed, I guess. And then she runs in to try to get the letter that she had written to him. Yeah. I don't know. I really think that those are good episodes. And
yeah, those are two of my favorites as well. Yeah. It really emphasized the relationship they have, and just like the way he was suddenly so concerned that she like sprained her ankle and yes. was very loving and tender to her. And it just sort of, you know, you understand why she was frustrated and nearly ran off of Nigel, but at the same time, you also understand why she stays mm-hmm. and what she sees in Maxwell.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was good. What drew you to do at this time, to do a video on the nanny? Was there something that in particular kind of caught your, because of Fran being in the news, or?
Well, it was a couple of things. You know, I've been making these videos for several years now. So there's always shows that get requested, and The Nanny is one that's been requested for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I actually resisted doing it because it really has to do with the distributor, Sony. Mm-hmm. So I had worked on another video for Married with Children, which is also distributed by Sony. And that I feel like I lost time off my life trying to get that thing offline. It was not fun.
Because of copyright.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Anytime you're, in my experience, anytime dealing with some other company that's like a Japanese based company. So if it's like something with anime, or, you know, it's like Sony or one of those, it's always way harder than, mm-hmm. yeah. I feel that.
I mean, compared to other distributors I've worked with, they're easily the toughest.
Yes.
But, you know, when the strike kicked off, and the SAG after strike, to be more specific, Fran gave that wonderful impassioned speech, and she was, you know, fighting for her fellow actors. And I don't know, I just thought, you know what, if she's willing to fight, maybe I should fight too. And I did get that video online, that Married with Children video online eventually. So maybe I can make this work for The Nanny. Mm-hmm. And I thankfully learned that I've gotten a lot better at knowing how to use footage in a way that distributors are okay with, I guess. Mm-hmm. So there were a few small hiccups, but it was not nearly as bad as I expected, thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I'm glad. Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm really happy for Fran that she has taken this leadership role and just excelled so well in it, because I think that it's such a good message for women, that all different kinds of women can be powerful leaders. And she did an Instagram video the other day where she was like, I don't need to use the terminology of men. I don't need to lead like a man. And that, you know, she was doing her face, and everything. And she was talking about, her relationships, and it was just a good video. And I just think that so often because leadership can be so brutal and unkind, that we don't tend to see women of all different personalities and abilities and everything lead and lead well. And I think she's been an incredible example, I think, of somebody that is a kind, feminine, beautiful, you know, wonderful, woman that's also a strong leader. And I just think that's great.
Yeah, I completely agree. And in many ways, I think, that this, like, her personality and her style of leadership, it's sort of given her a secret advantage, because I imagine a lot of particularly men in leadership positions would see her and underestimate her ability. Yes. And she's a very capable woman. She's very intelligent. And, you know, people, when they see her, they just hear the voice and they think of the nanny, who's a very, you know, a very silly character. Mm-hmm. But this is a character that was created by Fran Drescher. She wrote and directed episodes. She made it a hit. Like, she was a major driving force behind that. And you don't just do that accidentally, right? That's demonstrates talent and intelligence and capability and leadership, because she was leading that show.
Well, just the fact that she would make this pitch to Jeff Zielinski on a plane, you know, that she would have no no awkwardness, no, you know, that she would be confident, says a lot, I think, about who she is as a person, and that she goes for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I love that line, too, where she's like, where's he going to go, coach?
Right. Yeah, that was good. That was good. And I did not know, or I had forgotten, the interview clip that you had where they talked about that that the whole set was kind of beige in order to show off her fashion more. I'd missed that or forgotten it. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that was almost felt like I should have spent more time talking about her fashion sense, although I don't feel like I'm terribly well equipped to comment on it. But that was something I did notice about in my research, that was all done to make her pop, because, you know, she was the centerpiece of the show. Mm-hmm. There were all sorts of interesting things about the set I ultimately didn't include in the video, that like in the pilot, I was very surprised to find out, like, each piece of that set came from another show. Like, I think I mentioned the staircase, which was not in the pilot, but in the later episodes.
Yes.
That came from a different show. But, like, they mentioned the kitchen was, like, from a movie, something Yonkers. The staircase.
Oh, really?
The original staircase actually came from Leave It to Beaver, which I thought was super interesting. It's like a piece of television history right there.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And I forget about The Living Room, but it was another short-lived sitcom of the 90s. But so it in some ways that sort of reinforces what we were saying earlier about this. It was so aware of itself as, like, a part of TV history, although it was really just to save costs on the pilot, because they were just taking bits and pieces of things that were in the studio to make their first sets, because they're very efficient and they wanted to use as much money as they could to make it. The show as good as it could be.
Yeah. I was surprised you didn't mention Princesses, because that was the series that that she met Twiggy, that then that was the reason that she was over there in England.
Yeah, I think I used footage from it, but I'm not sure if I mentioned it specifically. But yeah, that's how they became friends. And yeah, that was the whole reason for her trip. And definitely. I mean, it was one of, like, many attempts to get Fran Drescher a TV show early on, but no one seemed to know how to use her as well as she did.
Yeah. Really. It's so funny, because she's sort of she's not even the, like, flamboyant one in that show. She's not the, I forget the whole cast was, and that's where she met Brenda Cooper, the costume designer.
Okay. I don't think I had found that out. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and she even used some of the same costumes in both shows. Or I don't know if that's where they met, but they'd worked together on Princesses. I'm so happy that Brenda Cooper did win an Emmy. It's the only show's I think the shows only win for the costumes, because so often shows about like normal fashion, right, don't get recognized for the costumes, you know, that it's only the period pieces or the fantasy or the, you know, whatever, that you think, oh, they're just wearing normal clothes. But like, it was such a part of the show, was the fashion and the way that she took so many outfits and made them Fran Fine outfits. You know, there was a lot of like skirts that were shortened and, you know, different things like that. And we kind of joke because it's interesting on the show, because she's obviously a very like sexy character. She's a very empowered character, but like she wears a lot of turtlenecks and tights. Like she actually almost never shows skin, Fran Fine, which is interesting, I think, with the costumes, because she was a nanny. And so there was always sort of a limit of kind of what she would wear. And she just did an incredible job with the costumes.
Yeah, I think you're totally right about sort of everyday fashion not getting recognized too, because so much that's going into a lot of those choices, when it's done well, really reflects who that character is. And I know Fran Fine has a very lavish wardrobe, but it all makes sense. Like she'll always come out and you'll be like, whoa, she's wearing something different today, but it makes sense because it's Fran Fine. She would wear that. And it just fits. And everyone else kind of has their own style too, which I appreciated. But it is obviously in contrast to Fran, because everyone would be in contrast to her when she walks into the room, basically. So
welcome to the Pilot Podcast. My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too, and we promise this promo is worth it, so please don't skip ahead.
We're two judgy friends who put our judgmental skills to work for you. We review the pilot episodes of new and popular shows, and shows that our listeners request to answer your question, should I watch this?
Look, a lot of us are spending a lot more time at home, and yes, we should be reading and trying new projects and enriching ourselves, but does anything beat binging a great show?
Let us take the guesswork out of deciding what your next show will be. Tune in to The Pilot Podcast at thepilotpodcast.com.
So when you were watching, was this a show that you had watched before doing the documentary?
No, actually. I was completely I was familiar with it. I have an older sister and she was a fan of the show. Although I think she was only a fan because she was very keen on Charles Shaughnessy from his time on Days of Our Lives. So, you know, it was a show that was on in my home when I was a little kid, so I was aware of it, but I never really watched it. And when I did watch it for the first time, I think I, by the end of the first episode, I was like, okay, I really missed the boat on this one. This was a lot of fun to watch, and just really funny, funny, which is what you need from any sitcom, really.
Yeah. Was that what surprised you the most, was just how funny it is?
Yeah, because a lot of shows from the 90s, you know, they're all right. I don't want to be too down on some of their shows, but, you know, the comedy doesn't quite have the same sort of bite or sting to it.
Yeah.
But I don't even know what joke did it to me that made me laugh. It was probably something Niles said in the first episode, and I just burst out laughing, and I said, like, okay, this one's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, I think the funniest line in the pilot, if we're talking about the pilot, is the your father's going to be old and sick, and you're going to want him to live with her.
that was a good one. Yeah.
Really good line. and then they're always like, why is Brighton being so nice to Mackie?
I remember now. It was the line about shiksas that really got me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like, is shiksas that like a tchotchke? And it's like, kind of, but a lot more expensive.
Sounds good, too. it's a queen. It's my mother in Queens.
This is just the first episode, too. That's mark of a strong script.
Yeah. You were talking, you had a little section talking about how the fact she's a Jewish character, she was the one of the first Jewish characters on a sitcom like this. Some people saying, oh, she's a cliche, a Jewish cliche. And this is the thing that kind of irritates me sometimes, is that people, it's like, it's a comedy. They're trying to make people laugh. Of course it's over the top. Of course it's a cliche. That's part of the joke. People were saying, oh, like Frasier and Niles are such like jerks, you know, like their dating history is not like the best, right? Because that wouldn't be funny if like they were just having pleasant dates all the time. Like that creates humor, you know, like people acting badly is funny, and the show is self-aware and knows it's over, in this case, knows it's over the top, knows it's ridiculous. That's what's funny. Like, I don't know. I think people want the most boring shows that don't like any personality or don't like comment on anything. Everybody just behaves perfectly all the time. I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, you do need a flawed character to draw out some comedy. I think
dating is funny. Dating, sex, relationships, people, it's funny. It's jokes.
Oh yeah. Don't we all know that? But yeah. the thing about Friends specifically, and you know, her being Jewish and any sort of stereotypical elements, I think part of what makes it work, or at least based on what I've read when it comes to any sort of depiction of a character who might be stereotyped in some way, is that they're not just that stereotype, that they are more than those parts. And you know, if you see Fran Fine and you just see the stereotypes, I think you're missing out on a lot of the character and who she is. And she's so much more than that. If she were just the stereotypes, she wouldn't be as funny, and B, I don't think people would connect to her the way they have. And I mean, you could probably speak to this better than I can, but she very much feels like a lot of female stereotypes, and you know, stereotypical woman obsessed with like shopping and finding a man. But almost every woman I spoke to about this show has fond memories because of her character.
Yeah, because it's making fun of that. It's part of the joke. Stop saying like that's it. I think that it's just, I don't know, people are weird about humor these days. But and I liked that you did have the person talking about the fact that they would have effortless expressions of her Jewish identity, like in the sense of she's just at temple. It's not like a big, it's just part of her life, you know, as you would. And in the Cantor episode that, you know, she's just at church, you know, a temple, and that is something I think that it was just so effortless the way it was worked into the stories.
And it was really ahead of its time, because when you look at a lot of sort of representation we've gotten since then, you know, it's always got to be an issue. It's always got to be central to the plot. Like, what does it mean to be from this group or that group? And, you know, those stories are certainly valuable and great to have, but they can't be everything. Like, every form of representation has to deal with these heavy issues. The idea that this Jewish woman could simply exist in the world and not have to have that part of her identity hidden or somehow made like low key or downgraded. It just is there. It is a natural part of her life.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of more modern shows are now trying to achieve. I don't know how successful they'll be, but it's in that way, it feels like The Nanny was like decades ahead of its time.
Well, and you just miss, I really do miss comedy. It's just sitcoms. I miss sitcoms. I miss just being able to turn on something that didn't have like, there was a mild continuity between the episodes, but just being able to turn on something and just have a laugh and you move on with your life. Like, I miss that. Everything really is so, everyone's trying to teach you something and everything's telling this big story. And I don't know.
I feel like the big stories are the real, real barrier. Cause sometimes they'll be like, oh, someone will tell me I watched the latest episode of whatever. And it's like, oh, I haven't seen that show. It's like, oh, well, you have to start at season one. It's like, and you're on season six.
Right.
And I'm like, I have about 120 episodes of The Nanny I need to watch. I don't know if I can invest this time into this new show.
I mean, seriously, a day doesn't go by that someone doesn't tell me, you got to watch this show. It's such a great show. And I'm like, what? I don't have time. I've got, you know, 100 Hallmark movies to watch every year. I don't have time to watch your show. And I don't know. I miss the timing of sitcoms and just the the pacing, the way the pacing of it, the you could guarantee like just a certain kind of entertainment, certain kind of laughter. And I feel like Chuck Lorre was still kind of keeping that alive with Two and a Half Men and Big Bang Theory. And I know some people hate those shows, but whatever. But I feel like he's kind of the last person that was still sort of doing that. And I don't know. I can't think of anything right now that's on. I guess Abbott Elementary would be as close as we have right now.
I've not seen it.
Yeah.
You're asking the wrong guy if you're talking about modern TV shows.
That's as close, but that's more on the sort of the more like The Office kind of mm-hmm. the sitcom. But yeah, I don't know. I just miss this kind of sitcom. I think there's something you described as comfort TV.
Yeah. I think that's what a lot of these older sitcoms mm-hmm. feel like to a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of the comments I see under my videos describe these shows as being very comforting and something, mm-hmm. well, like you said, you can just put it on at any point and, you know the characters, you know how it all sort of works. You're not going to be in the middle of like a 5-episode story arc or something. Mm-hmm. You're just going to have fun for a good 22 minutes and get on with your day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Did you have a guest star that was a favorite of yours?
Oh, I don't know.
there's some good ones.
There are so many good ones.
Elton John and Elizabeth Taylor. And
I got to say, I really liked Ray Charles.
Yeah.
Just his, like the Sammy Yetta dynamic, I thought was so adorable. So cute. I don't know. There's something about like two old folks just falling in love and it's like, oh, it's never too late to fall in love. How sweet. Mm-hmm. And that got to me.
Yeah.
So basically any episode he's in, it, even though he doesn't do a ton, just his presence elevates it for me.
That was fun. Yeah. So what did you think of Oi to the World, the animated episode?
It was strange. I was like the whole time I was watching it, I felt like I didn't talk about it a lot in the video for a reason, because I was like, I do not know what to say. It was so different. I really respect the idea of just sort of stepping out of their comfort zone and being like, we're going to do something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when a show will just do that at some point, because why not?
Right.
Some of it worked, I think, very well. Some of it, maybe not so well, but it was, I'm glad it exists, if that makes sense.
I don't think
it's going to be in my Christmas rotation, but it's a nice episode in the midst of a nanny binge, I guess.
We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Are you looking for that perfect gift for the postable, hardy, or Hallmarkie in your life?
What about getting that t-shirt or hoodie that will help you stand out at your next holiday party?
Now is the time to check out the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Full of festive designs by artists like Jessica Miller, Carrie from Hallmark Comics, and more.
You can even have more than just shirts, but totes, cell phone cases, notebooks, mugs, and more.
And it isn't just Hallmark. We have designs for Anne of Green Gables, Man from Snowy River, The Nanny, and more.
Every purchase at the merch store goes to help support the podcast and allows us to make the great content you know and love.
There are frequent sales, so go to tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies or see the link in the description.
That's tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies.
So what did you think in the world of backdoor pilots? What do you think of the Chatterbox? I mean, oof. I think it is the worst episode of the show, but...
You're not alone there. based on some of the research I did, it's no one seems to like that thing. And
it's pretty bad.
I mean, there are a lot of bad backdoor pilots. I've seen quite a few at this point. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I would say it's the worst. Like it had something going on, I guess. Like I've seen some really bad ones. But you could tell this just wasn't going to work. Like, no offense to anyone involved. Some of them went on to do better things. So, yeah.
Yeah. It is probably the worst episode. The second worst episode, I don't know the name or the episode number, but it's the one where she thinks she's black. That one.
Oh, right. With her, she thinks she has a different mother.
It was black.
Yeah,
that one is bad. and that you had in there about Fran talking about wanting to have more diversity on the show, and you could see some of that in later seasons, and that's great. You know, she had Coolio on and things like that. But that one was bad.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate her desire to represent a more realistic vision of New York, but right. Not every attempt at diversity is going to be a winner.
Yeah. You had a section about Sylvia and the fat jokes, the eating. That was definitely her thing. There were some pretty funny ones, but you think that was not in good taste? You didn't like that?
Well, I admit I did laugh at some of those jokes. You know, that one was in some ways based on some feedback I got from my audience about some of the previous shows I had covered. And it was a topic I had been meant to address at some point, because I mean, that was sort of a staple of, God, like every sitcom going back to every decade. And this was a character who was very prominently featured. And
yeah, like Fat Monica.
Yeah.
On Friends.
Yeah. It was, like Ned, for me, when I hear those jokes, I keep thinking of people, you know, who have very earnestly explained to me how those jokes hurt them. So I have trouble watching them. I know some people are totally fine with that, and I'm not like here to judge anyone on what they find funny, but I do think it's something to perhaps reflect on.
Yeah, I'm not somebody that has to have body positivity in everything, and you can, I mean, food is funny, and you can have jokes about overeating or you know, tempt delicious food, and it can be funny. That's no problem. But and some of them were, I think, pretty funny with Remy Renee's just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, that's so the thing. She is so talented and
so good.
Yeah.
But they definitely leaned on it too much at a point, you know, became like slightly Flanderized, her character with that. And I think her doctor actually told her like, you can't like, and so then they had to, that's why they had her, she ended up losing the weight. And then there was the whole change in storyline, in, later seasons because it was hurting her health. But yeah, there are like in the new Wonka movie, which I overall enjoyed, there's a super, super horrible plot line with Keegan-Michael Key's character eating all the chocolates. And he keeps every scene you see him in, he's more overweight till he can't even hardly fit through the car door. And I mean, it's not funny, and it's just super cringy and gross. It's like, why did they put that in? I have no idea. So it can be a problem, but I think for the most part, it was in good fun in this.
Yeah. I mean, it often depends on the talent of the people involved, and I don't think it was quite as mean-spirited as some other shows.
Yes.
Because there are definitely other shows where it's like really harsh, and it's, you just sort of feel like, can you just like let off on this person for a change? And and with Sylvia too, it was not always about her body. It was more often than not about the food, which I think helped soften things a bit. Although I just couldn't get over the fact that she did not appear in any way overweight or fat or anything. Like,
right. Yeah.
I mean, I guess she's got a little bit extra, but it's like, I don't know. It seemed like perfectly normal for a woman in her 60s. So
right. Yeah. I mean, some people's metabolism just amazing.
Yeah. This is what happens when you get older. Your metabolism slows down.
Yeah. You mentioned two other episodes that are my favorites. I love Call Me Fran. You specifically mentioned that in the documentary. I think it's maybe a perfect episode of television, that episode. I mean, it's as far as romantic comedy writing, it's so well executed. And when he finally calls her by her first name, and she looks at what just happened. She's about to leave him. Brad.
Yeah, I know. It's so perfectly captured how like the professional side of the relationship was dissolving in that moment.
Yes.
And it's like, once he said Fran, it was like, well, that's it. Mm-hmm. They have to get together. I mean, it always felt inevitable in a way, but that was like the grand romantic gesture, just using her first name, which says a lot about everyone, really.
Right. And then I also just love the engagement. I love the fact that, I mean, I don't love the fact that he got beat up, but I love the fact that you have Maxwell Sheffield in trash getting a pop top thing because he's not going to wait another second to propose to Fran. He loves her that much, and that's just really romantic.
Yeah, and she didn't even need to say yes.
Yeah,
that's you know. What do we you all think? Know.
Yeah, it's such a great way to do their engagement. I think it was really good, humbling for, you know, him. Like, it was so much better than if he'd been in, like, you know, a fancy restaurant or something like that. You know, he's in trash.
Not even trash could hold him back.
One of my favorites, I love one called Imaginary Friend, where Fran is killed Grace's imaginary friend, and they do like CPR on it, and they're like, on the imaginary friend, because now Grace doesn't need it because she has Fran. And yeah, that's sort of ending.
Is sweet.
Very sweet. Very sweet. I also love let's see, what's another one I love? I think the Fran light is fun when Maxwell starts dating a woman who's just like Fran, like literally has the same hair, same everything. And I love the fact that Fran is just like, wow, she's great. I love her. That one's funny. The Shopaholic episode, that one's a really good one. Their first kiss, you had that on there, which I think is a fun one.
There are many kisses, to be honest.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of them are kind of like fantasy. That's how they kind of get around. They're like dreaming or something like that is how they get around it. But what else? I like the Canasta Masta. That one's fun, where Brighton ends up being replacing Fran on her mom's Canasta team. She's like, hey. That one's really funny. And a close shave. That may be the most popular episode amongst fans.
Yeah. I mean, that moment really where she has to shave Maxwell, I feel like I had to somehow mention it. I didn't have a ton to say about the actual episode, but that moment, I needed to include it.
Yeah. And then I also love Kindervelt Days, which is where she has this reunion and Maxwell's not going to be able to come at first. And so she ends up, she's going to go with him. I forget his name, but she ends up getting left and she's all there alone. And then he shows up and it's great. And then they dance. So that one's I'm obviously a big rom-com person. So the moments of the show that really hit on the rom-com, is the stuff the most.
That was probably some of its strongest elements, really. So makes sense.
I don't love, I love the wedding. I do not love the whole island.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you didn't need to wait that long for these two people to have sex. Like, what was the problem? Like, why did they have to, they stretched it even longer.
That was one thing the show seemed to love to do, was make the audience wait for something.
Oh,
just wait and wait and wait.
I just think that's stupid. It's a stupid plot because it's not like it's a super realistic, but the guy, they would just get them back in the water and in the boat. Like, why? It's just so stupid. I just don't.
Yeah, it's the boat was fine.
Yeah.
They just went overboard. Didn't really make sense.
No,
when you think about it, I feel like they just wanted to do a Gilligan's Island kind of deal. So
they wanted to end on this like cliffhanger, so that they could stretch them actually being together. And somehow they made the fact that every time that Fran thinks that she's might be pregnant. It's always like in a cave or or on an island. She can't ever just have normal relations, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting that last season, because you talked about how they aired most of the episodes in the summer after the finale. That's crazy.
Yeah. When I was watching it, I was watching it in the order it was intended. And while I was watching, I was thinking like, this would have been terrible.
Yeah.
Like you would have missed so much if they did the finale out of order.
Oh, I would have been so mad.
Yeah. I feel bad for any nanny fans back in the, what was it? 98?
Yeah.
Who had to watch it like that.
So do you think that the nanny theme song slash intro is maybe the best at like ever? It's got to be in that conversation of sitcom themes.
Definitely. I mean, there are a lot of strong contenders, like, you know, like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is another one that would be in the mix. But I miss the days of like theme songs where they tell you what the show's about.
Yeah.
Now it's just sort of like music and some images, and you know, that can be very good and effective, but
yeah.
Where's the catchy little song that tells you?
Yeah, if they even give you an intro at all.
Sometimes it's just a title and a few bars of music, mm-hmm. and then they just go into the show. I'm like, okay, yeah. I guess no intro for this one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's right up there with, you gotta say the Nanny, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the Golden Girls.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's up there.
That's a really good one.
Yeah. Well, very good. Thank you so much for coming and talking with us. This was a treat. I haven't been able to talk about The Nanny for a while, and I really enjoyed your documentary. I'll have a link in the description for people that get a chance to watch it. And I'd be curious to see what you have coming up next.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me. And I mean, I can actually tell you what's coming up next.
Yeah, please. Now.
Because the video is basically done. Yeah, that's okay to say. I'll be doing the British version of The Office. And you know, that was an experience putting together.
Yeah, you got your cynical cap on for that one.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Cool. We'll look forward to that. And if people want to follow you on socials and your channel and everything, how do they do that?
Well, on YouTube, it's very easy. You just type my name, J-O-S-E, into the search box. I should be the top result. You'll see a delightful little blue jay as my channel profile icon. I have no idea what my Twitter handle is these days. Or X. I guess it's X.
Yeah, whatever. This is ridiculous.
It's not that exciting to follow me on there, but there are other links on my YouTube page if you want to know what's up with me there, too. Cool.
We'll have that all in the description so people can check it out. And make sure that you if you put your reviews for the show, we would really appreciate it on the iTunes. And check out all of our recaps of The Nanny. If you're a fan of the show, we would love for you to check that out. It was something we did, my friends and I did during the pandemic, and it helped us get through and stay positive, and I'm really proud of it. I think they're really fun. And we talked about the fashion, and we talked about everything else going on. And we did all cover the rest of anything else that Fran does, you know, we've talked about. So definitely please take a look at that. I would really appreciate it. And then also you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes, and also the Hallmarkies podcast. You can find all of my coverage, and we even got to interview. I've interviewed Fran for Hallmarkies podcast and also for the Francast. So check that out. And thanks again. It was so great to meet you.
It was lovely to meet you too.
And have a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too.